All right, I think I have on the phone, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Larry Stevenson, correct?
I am here. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing good, Larry. Nice of you to be available. I know you're going to be on for a little while. Then I think the plan is maybe to get a hold of Mr. Sonny Osborne.
Oh, that would be nice.
That'd be fun. You know him, don't you?
I've heard of him, and I do know him, and I haven't seen him in 2 days, so it'll be good to hear his voice.
Well, I don't know how you can go that long without seeing him.
We had lunch on Thursday.
Thursday? I bet I know where. Don't say it. Yeah, don't say it, because it'll be stormed.
Don't say it. That's right. Yeah, you're probably right. From what I hear, you were there once.
I've been there many times.
Yeah, I think I must have been out of town when you were there.
You were going up north the last time I was down there because we were all going to get together, and you had a job. And since Sonny's retired, he didn't have to go with you. So
right. He goes, let me check my schedule. Yeah, I'm available. And he shows up.
So, yes, he does.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to breaking bread with you sometime there.
Yeah, I'm about due. I try to come down a couple times a year and just, you know, hang out and see what's going on and just visit a little bit. So I'll let you know next time we head down that way.
Absolutely.
Hey, listen, I finally got the most recent recording, which I've just enjoyed thoroughly. I want to let everyone know that I appreciate the fact that you re-recorded Philadelphia Lawyer with Sam Bush.
A song close to your heart.
Huh? Song, you know what? Here's the thing, Larry, that lawyers don't do well in bluegrass songs. I've noticed a trend.
Well, when they're messing with lawyers, they're leaving banjo players alone, right?
And you know, here's the other thing, too. For whatever reason, I've chosen two parts of my life, and it's the same jokes. They just change banjo player to lawyer, and I get hit on both sides.
Sorry, I kind of didn't think about that before I said it.
No, listen, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. How you doing?
Oh, man, I'm doing great. Just having a good day here at the house, and went out and got my lawnmower ready to go this morning, and just messing around. Everything's good. I can't complain too much.
Well, you when we talked earlier this week, you were headed down to where were we headed? Alabama.
When you called me, I was in Alabama. And we were on our way last Friday, a week ago, we were on our way to Gulf Shores, Alabama. And then we went from there to Thomasville, Georgia, and then to Claremont, Georgia, and got home late last Sunday night. Mm. So all's good.
Tell the people that are listening, who's now in the Larry Stevenson Band?
I've got a young man that's been with us not quite a year named Colby Laney playing guitar. Colby's from Marion, North Carolina, playing guitar and singing. And Danny Stewart is playing bass. He's been with me, gosh, about 3 years now, I guess. He's playing bass, singing bass, and Kenny Ingram's playing banjo.
Ooh.
Going on 4 years now with me.
Kenny playing's a mean banjo. I noticed on the new album that, he re-recorded Bear Tracks.
He did, yeah.
20 years ago, I saw JD at a show, and I, you know, at halftime, I'm saying, hey, why don't you get up here and play Bear Tracks? And his comment to me was, that's one you play in the studio and you just leave alone.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
So the fact that anybody, and I know Jimmy Mills did a few years ago, put it out on a record.
Right.
But Kenny Ingram absolutely tears the cover off of it on this newer album that you got.
He plays it great, and he just brought that, I think he uses a different banjo. It's got the tuners, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes he'll bring two banjos with him, and he just, here's one we're going to start doing a couple of years ago, and he started playing it, and just people love it, and it's something you just don't hear often, and it's a unique tune, and Kenny plays it really well, and I was glad he wanted to record it.
I think JD did that originally with Jimmy Martin way back in the in the day, and then of course he's re-recorded it himself, and it's an absolute knuckle buster for a banjo player.
Yeah. It's funny, you know, it's fun for me to watch Kenny play that or hear him play it, but I like to look out in the audience and watch people watch Kenny play that. And when he goes through all those gears and turns everything, and it's quite fascinating to watch the people look at him.
Well, he actually has to reach above the nut, doesn't he, to flick off a couple of those notes?
Yes, yeah, he does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, he's got those nice calluses built up. He didn't have to worry about the.
That's right. He's a great guy, and I moved to Nashville in 1992. I've been down here almost 21 years, and if I'd have known Kenny Ingram would have been this good and this much fun to travel with, I'd have called him in 92 when I moved here. Mm. I don't know what took me so long, but it's you know, things work out the way they do, and he's a joy to be around and have around.
Hey, I want to talk about the album a little bit. We've got everything here, and I want to play a couple cuts before we bother the chief later on. But I've seen postings on Facebook from Donna Ulysses that you're sneaking in on her album.
Yeah, you know, Donna, her and her husband Rick have turned into some really good friends of my wife and I, Dream and I, and we've had dinner with them on occasions, and we worked dates with them on occasions, and I was just honored and tickled to death that she asked me to sing on her record. I went over this past Tuesday night. She's cutting the new bluegrass record, and it's really good, and I was just honored I got to sing on it with her. And she's a good singer, too, and a good person. She's a lot of fun.
Well, and I've met her, you know, my contact with her is minimal. I mean, I've just seen her a couple times, and I happen to be kind of a chatty guy, so I talked to her, and she's just seems to me to be, I don't think she's faking being that pleasant of a person.
No, she's for real. She's definitely for real and a lot of fun. And she's one of those people that, and we all know one like this, that when you ask her something, you better be prepared for the answer. Because she's going to tell you like it is, whether you want to hear it.
I know. You know one like that. I know one like that. We're going to we're all going to talk to him in a few minutes when we get around to it. But that's
what I was getting at.
Yeah, don't ask me.
She's a sweetheart, and I'm looking forward to this record getting out. So
that's good.
Yeah.
Hey, what as I'm looking through this latest album, is there anyone that you after you've had it out for a while, did you get a good react? Because I'm going to play Philadelphia Lawyer before I get rid of you, but I want to see what else you want to hear.
You know, one of the most requested songs we're having is so far has been "The Seashores of Old Mexico."
Okay,
and that's been requested a lot. And one of my favorites is "You're Too Easy to Remember."
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. I could actually do a small set with that. I could throw in we're talking about Sonny a lot. When he would left alone with a banjo, he comes up with these Spanish sounding tunes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Siempre and El Cumbanchero, all those things that he does, and maybe hanging around Sonny's got you hanging out out southwest there somewhere.
Yeah, and you know, that Osborne brother influence has been with me for forever, and I credit those guys for the reason I'm sitting here talking to you today, basically. Mm. You know, and the kickoff to "You're Too Easy to Remember" is a Sonny Osborne kickoff. Of an old song they cut on MGM years ago that escapes me for the moment. But when I heard the song and I knew how well Kenny Ingram enjoyed Sonny Osborne's banjo playing, "How's the World Treating You" is the name of the song.
Oh, okay.
The Osborne brothers recorded that on MGM back in the day, and it's basically the same kickoff that the Osborne and Sonny played on "How's the World Treating You." "You're Too Easy to Remember." So that influence is there.
Do you do like I do when I go back and listen to their all the stuff they've put out? Do you sometimes just sit and shake your head because they were so darn good in so many ways?
Yeah, they were amazing.
I mean, not just musicianship, but their singing and the song selection and how they presented things. That was a unique get together. They stayed together for so long.
Well, and their arrangements of the songs and. Yeah, it's just it's all just absolutely the best, and I can still listen to those records that were cut in 1960, and to me they sound as good today as they did the first time I heard them. You know, when I was a kid, and it's just the best.
I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to set my phone down, which is what I have to do, and I'm going to just roll over. And I'm going to click on "You're Too Easy to Remember," if that's okay with you.
That'll work.
And then you and I will be off air for a while, but we'll be playing a couple tunes here real quick, all right?
Okay, sounds good.
All right, Larry Stevenson calling in. Thanks so much. We're going to play some songs. We'll come back and talk to Larry in just a second. All right, there were a couple tunes from Larry Stevenson's last album, which when did that come out, Larry?
It was officially released May 29th of last year on Compass Records, a new label for me.
Isn't that, is that Allison Brown's label?
Allison Brown,
yeah.
Her husband Gary West.
Yeah. That's a big, well, if you check out Compass Records, they got a lot of people.
They got a ton of people.
Yeah.
And people that I've never heard of, and but they're selling CDs, and they're into all kinds of
a lot of Celtic and Irish. Yeah, yeah.
A lot of neat stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when we played, when you and I were talking, I went ahead and played for the listeners out there. And by the way, I'm talking to Larry Stevenson. I have to remind him every once in a while. I forget to remind him when I get involved in these conversations. So we played You're Too Easy to Remember. Then I went ahead and skipped down the Philadelphia Lawyer. And as I always say, that one always makes me cry.
That's your new theme song, isn't it?
It should be my new theme song. Yeah.
It should be.
Except they'd kill me in Philadelphia, too, if I was a lawyer. I can't deal with Philadelphia lawyers. I'm just a regular lawyer. The Philadelphia kind just eat me alive. But those are great. Those are great. And how did you hook up with Sam Bush on the Philadelphia Lawyer tune?
I've known Sam forever, and I see him a lot around town occasionally. And we've been at different picking parties together, you know, different places. And he's always just been, he's just a good guy, you know, and he's got great stories. And he's always so nice and complimentary of me and different things. And I ran into him at the IBMA last year in Nashville. The Dale McCurry Band was doing that show down there in the parking lot of the Ryman Auditorium that afternoon. And Sam was there and different people, and I got up and sang and played Sam's mandolin because I didn't have my mandolin. But Sam said, man, we ought to sing one together sometime. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, I'd love to. And then we went into the studio. This would have been IVMA 2 years ago. And we went into the studio, and Ben Surratt, my co-producer, engineer, suggested doing Philadelphia Lawyer as a duet, because I don't think the song's ever been done as a duet.
No.
Recall.
No.
And so I called up Sam and said, here's what I want to do, and what do you think? Bring your fiddle. And the first thing he said to me the day I called him, he said, I'll have to get my Red Allen record out. And I thought, man, I got the right guy for the right job here. And we it was one of the best 3 hours in the afternoon in the studio I've ever had. It was just so much fun. We did the song live, singing it together live.
Oh, okay, good.
And in the studio, and it was just a treat. He wore me out, but it was fun.
He's
a good guy, and I think it fit well. He did a good job on it.
Isn't it funny how, of course, you've known Sam forever, but you run into him like that a couple years ago, and you happen to see him, and all of a sudden you talk about it, and boom, it winds up happening.
Yeah. Yeah, we were getting ready to record, you know, and I called him and said, hey, you know, you made the offer. Well, here's my offer. So, and he said, yeah, well, tell me where and when you want me to be there. He was just really cool about it, and we're off and running. So, it's kind of like talking about the Osborne brothers or somebody. I feel the same way about Sam Bush, you know, because I have such respect for all those guys that have been around and done what they've done. And you know, I was a big fan of the Newgrass Revival, believe it or not, and everything Sam's ever done. And I knew Sam's daddy fairly well, and it was a treat to have.
How did you know Sam's father?
When I moved to Nashville in 92, we started working a fair amount of dates on the Opry, the Grand Ole Opry, and Sam's daddy was always at the Opry. He lived in Bowling Green, Kentucky. His name was Charlie, and him and Roy Acuff, I think, were big buddies, and because Sam talks about his daddy bringing him down there when he was a kid and introducing him to Roy Acuff and all this kind of stuff, you know, And Sam's a few years older than I am, so we're pretty close. And I just got to know him, seeing his daddy like at the early days of IBMA at Owensboro, Louisville, and then just I think meeting him at the Opry a lot. He was always kind of there at the Opry, you know. There's Sam Bush's daddy, you know, and he was always just really nice, you know, like Sam is, and complimentary and all that. So just somebody you ran into over the years.
You know, it's funny, and I think this may have been the same year that you're talking about running into him down at Nashville and IBMA. Bobby Osborne, the vendors area, for people out there, if you've never been to IBMA, they have a big concert stage, and they have an area where vendors and people come and set up stuff. And a lot of times artists will be there too. And I know Sam was sitting in the middle of that place. And Bobby Osborne was there at a table, and of course he had his big hat on and his sunglasses. I don't think that many people recognize who the heck was sitting back there. And all of a sudden, Sam left his big, you know, pretty recognizable setup for Sam Bush, and of course he has a special Gibson mandolin. And And he ran back there to left his place and went back to sit with Bobby Osborne. It was kind of a neat thing that he felt that nobody knew who Bobby was, or he was sitting too far back, and he left his booth and ran back there and sat next to Bobby. And it was kind of a cool thing to see, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely. And all those guys, man, they're just the best. You know, they got a respect for each other, and they know where this music came from and understand it. I think that's really important, you know. And we're losing so many of these first-generation guys. It's really sad, you know. And I think we need to embrace them and be around them as much as we can, you know, to carry all this wisdom on, because they're smart, man. These guys, they're on the ball, and they know what's going on out here. And I love being around them and hearing the stories and just soaking it up.
Well, I mean, you could, and we keep talking about Sonny because we know he's coming on, but you could talk to Sonny, and we've done it here on the show, too, just about life on the road. How do you survive on the road as a band? How do you survive as a band selecting music to record? How do you do all those things? It's just amazing what you soak up from what they've lived through.
Yep, you better believe it. Sonny produced a bunch of my CDs in the 90s when I was with Pinecastle Records.
The
Osbournes were with Pinecastle, and he said to me one day, he said, "I'd like to produce some of your CDs," which is kind of intimidated the you know what out of me that he said that to me, but we ended up doing it, and I got to soak up even more of all that with him in the studio. And Kristen Scott Benson was playing banjo with me a lot at the time.
She got to
know Sonny and soak up a lot of that, and Aaron McDaris was there for a while and got to be around Sonny, and it just doesn't get any better.
And you know, really, in the way you describe it, Larry, soak it up. It's almost, you have to, it's not just the words, it's not just the stories. There's something about that transfer, and I don't know what you would call it, an osmosis that goes on, but it's not just hearing it, you couldn't read it and get it.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Sonny's calling me right now. Hold on a second. let me play a song, and I'll call him back, because I got to patch him into your call. All right? Hold on. All right, through the magic of modern day technology, Larry Stevenson, you're still there, right, Larry?
I'm here, yeah.
All right, and Sonny Osborne, you're on the phone too?
Yeah.
All right, see, I'm used to doing this because I get these conference calls from the court and they always take a roll call, so now I know everybody's on the same page.
Oh, okay. I'm here. How are you, Sonny?
I'm good, Lawrence. How's it going?
Oh, everything's good today. Sitting up here in Cottontown, hanging out today. Not much going on.
Blowing up any engines today?
No, don't want to blow up no engines. I did start my lawnmower this morning, so everything went okay with that. So.
Okay. What's happened, Steve?
When did you blow up your engine, Larry? I didn't ask you about that.
Oh, geez. Last November, November 12th, 2:30 in the morning. Blew the engine in my bus.
Is that when you were heading north?
Hey, it not only blew the engine to the bus, it blew the whole back end of the bus off. Kenny Ingram was driving, and that's the only way he knows how to blow an engine up, is just take the whole thing out.
Yeah. Kind of like his banjo playing. You know, it's either all or nothing, you know?
Absolutely all.
And when you talk about blowing an engine, I mean, it really blew. It blew the you-know-what out of it.
Well, what do you do when your bus blows up on you? What do you do if you live?
If you live?
Yeah, what do you do? What do you do when your bus blows up and you're on somewhere, assuming you all live through it, what you did, then how do you rearrange that one?
Well, I arrange for a loan.
Yeah.
Is that where you come in, Sonny?
You arrange for a loan.
Okay.
That's what you do.
Yeah. Well, luckily, we were close to home. We were on our way home, and I was close to home.
Oh, okay.
So, okay. It could have been a lot worse. We could have been in the middle of a trip somewhere or something. But I never thought about calling Sonny for a loan. You gave me a good idea.
I think that's what he's suggesting.
Oh.
We blew an engine up in Flint, Michigan one time. And oh my goodness, we had right in the middle of a 15, 18 day tour. It just ruins everything.
It really does. Any kind of breakdown in the middle of a tour we're ruining everything. But you blow an engine, that's even worse. Because you got tow bills and everything else, you know.
Oh, yeah. And then to arrange somebody to bring what they call him a low boy to put that book on it, and other than to tow it, they put it up on a truck bed and drive it back where you want it to go.
Mm.
Oh, it's total myth. Nothing is funny on a tour after that happens. Nothing.
You're just ready to get it over with.
You just want to get it over with and go home and get to bed and cover up, and nobody wakes you for a while. And then they secure the loan. They're quite expensive. I mean, they're quite expensive. I've always said that the minute that you buy a bus, you cease being the band leader at that time. You start working. The whole band then works for that bus.
You told me that about 15 years ago, and I never looked at it that way, and I didn't want to believe it, but you're right. I mean,
the bus becomes the leader of the band.
But it's the only way to do what we do, you know?
Oh, yeah. Safest way to go.
Yeah, it's the safest, it's the best, it's the most comfortable, and you just do it, you know?
Hey,
we drove about 120, I guess maybe an average of 110 to 120,000 miles a year for, I guess, about maybe 15, 18 years.
Mm.
And in all that time, I mean, you're constantly on the road, and all that time, if you were in a car, first of all, your health would give out, and secondly, you have a lot bigger chance of having a major accident in a car. And a bus is that's the safest way to go. The best thing to do is get a driver or two, but normal people can't afford that anymore.
Yeah, damn. And you know about having accidents in cars, don't you? Because you did that once, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Bad one. Bad one. Just about. Dale Sled came very, very close to dying. Because it knocked his heart loose. They explained it in layman's terms. I don't know what you would call it, but his heart was detached inside of his chest.
Mm.
And every time he would just the slightest movement, he would almost die.
Wow.
And it was a touch and go for a long time.
Yeah.
Bobby was hurt glass. He had glass in his hand, his face. It's pretty bad.
Wow.
When was that, Sonny?
Oh, my gosh. 75, I guess.
Yeah.
Wow. Were you all traveling in a truck and a car at the time or something?
No, we had a deal with Ford, and we were using two station wagons, and we'd run about 28,000 miles to turn them in and get two more.
Hmm.
And, we were driving 74 station wagons at the time. And yeah, that's what it was, 74.
Wow.
And I was pulling a trailer with mine, and Bobby was, they just had the regular wagon. And it was in Bean Station, Tennessee, and they rounded a little curve, and I guess Dale was driving and maybe went to sleep or took his eyes off the road and ran under the two rear wheels of a trailer, not the track mount, a trailer, and hit so hard that it knocked those wheels out from under the trailer.
Wow.
It was a total mess. I mean, I was 100 miles down the road, 90-some miles down the road before I knew about it.
Mm.
They were, I didn't think about it. The state patrolman came and put lights. I mean, I argued with him because I wasn't doing anything. And he said, "You need to step out and get in my car." I said, "No, I don't. I wasn't doing anything." I argued with him.
That's unusual. That's unusual, Sonny.
Yeah, it is for me. I mean, you know, I'm an easygoing, laid back kind of guy. I don't ever say anything rude to anybody other than the sound man.
Yeah.
And just about everybody else that I know.
And people that sing your songs on the same show you're on.
Oh, no.
That was funny. Oh, my God. But I tell you what I did before they stopped me. It was 92 miles down the road, and Dennis Dignan was playing bass for us, and he was in the car with me, and I got, it's in Rockwood, Tennessee, where they finally got to me, and the wreck where they were in the hospital at Morristown, and the cop stopped me, and I went up to the top of that hill right out of Rockwood there, coming toward Nashville, and I unloaded the trailer, and we drove back to that, where the hospital was. And we made it there in an hour. We drove 92 miles.
Oh, my.
And when we got there, Dennis Dignan said, he got out of the car. He said, I'm lucky to get out of this car. I know what thank you for. Oh, my gosh. What a day. Mm. It was. But then that's a whole other thing when somebody chooses to sing your songs on the show that you're on.
Larry, what have you done?
I've done it. Yeah.
We had a nice, peaceable conversation. All right.
I've been chewed out over it many times. So
there was one guy that tried to show Bobby up. He literally tried to show Bobby up. My goodness, Roby
Huff.
Yeah. He's been deceased. Yeah. I understand. But we were playing in Florida, and just before we went on, this guy said that he was going to sing another song here, and he's sang Ruby. And
error.
I don't care what anybody says. My brother, think what you will of him, but my brother was one of the best voices probably ever. And boy, when he got riled up, he flat got riled up, and he heard Roby say that. Instead of me running out on the stage, he said, "I want to sing that song the way it actually goes."
Yeah.
And he did. Oh my goodness, he did. But that happened. The what was that motorcycle gang?
Gulfing Express.
Who?
Goldwing Express.
Oh, yeah, Goldwing Express. And they would sing like 6 or 7 of our songs on the same show that we were on. They thought it was funny. I had some choice words to say to a couple of them. Got backstage before we went on. There was some strong adjectives in there.
And some adverbs, too, I bet.
Oh, my goodness. There's no call for that, you know. There's no reason for it. I think Larry was just trying to show us up. We were just trying to have fun, don't we? That was a good thing.
I did do it once up in Virginia, and I saw the look on your face, and I recall it very well. But I never did do it a whole lot after that. But the one time we did it, we followed you guys at Cherokee in North Carolina. And we had just come out with that record Far Away in Tennessee.
Yeah.
There's a cabin on a mountain far away in Tennessee. And Sonny said, we're going to have Gene Wooten sing the title track to Larry Stevenson's new album. And they proceeded to do it.
It's funny because there's like 5,000 people sitting out there.
So the Osborne Brothers came off the stage, and we were introduced, and we opened up our show with the Cuckoo Bird. And Bobby didn't know what was going on. Remember that?
No.
He got so mad.
Oh, he's just completely oblivious for the whole thing.
He was.
We got off, he said, and see, he didn't hear me say that was your... Yeah. This record. He didn't hear me say that. He was just in some other world. And when we got off, you started to cuckoo where he said, "This not there. I'm making this not there." And I'm back there, got the losers laughing so hard.
Yeah. Oh, the audience went nuts. Everybody loved it. It was
oh, cool. Yeah. Everybody was popping.
Yeah, everybody was popping.
Who's he thinking he is?
Yeah.
Yeah. One time in Lebanon, Virginia, at a festival, the Oak Ridge Boys were on that show, and just before we went on, they sang Rock the Cop. And I left a note on the windshield of the bus, and I said, fortunately for you, we don't know any of your songs. It was funny, so when we got off the stage, there was three of them. That, the guy sang bass, he wouldn't have anything to do. Well, he won't now either. He won't have anything to do with anybody. But there were three of those guys, Dwayne and, oh, I can't remember the other two guys, but they were standing out beside our bus. Yeah, we was in the bus that time. Standing out beside the bus door, and no, it was in a motorhome, that's right. And standing up beside that, and they came in, insisted on coming in and sitting down and apologized. All three of them did. And Dwayne told me, I became close friends with Dwayne Allen, and he told me about, oh, I don't know, 7 or 8 years later, he said, you know, that's the last time we sang that song.
Yeah.
But, you know, it goes like that. I don't remember, like, what we did with Larry. We just had fun with him on that, but I'm not sure we ever did that.
Well, you didn't have to.
Well, no, but then, I guess, well, you can look at it that way. Skeeter Davis came to me one night at the Opry, and she said, are you guys going to do Rocky Top tonight? I'd like to do it. You are, Ellie, you're mine. And I said, if you want to do it, go on out there. But we are going to sing it.
Wow.
She didn't do it. We were making I think there's PBS one time, a TV show, and Loretta Lynn would not be on the show unless she got to sing Rocky Top. And Skaggs was the head of the bluegrass portion, and he came and told me that. And I said, well, we can either just not do the show, or we can say, no, we're not going to relinquish, or we can do another song. And he said, well, to make matters easy, could you do Ruby Baby or something like that? I said, sure, we will. But she said, don't sing it off the top. I don't know why, because she never sang that song. I never heard her sing it again or before.
Wow.
But she insisted on Milligram CBS. I don't know why.
Hey, Larry, how did you get Sonny to come back on your album, your previous album, and sing Me and My Old Banjo with you?
I just asked him.
Yeah, you just...
Right? Isn't that what I did?
He threatened. No, he didn't. It was a pleasure to do that. To be honest, it was.
We were having lunch one day, and I asked him, and Rhino sang the third part on it that day, too, and me and my old banjo, and I just asked if he'd like to do it, and he graciously said yes, he would, and when it came out, Sonny argued with us that it wasn't his voice on the record. He said,
I knew that. That's what I wanted to get to.
Who is that?
I still don't think it was. I think you guys doctored that.
No.
So, Ben, listen, the engineer and studio owner, Ben, is awfully good at that. Ben's right. Awfully good at that. And I've seen him in action before. And I think that when... here's the thing of it. Singing is just like playing in an instrument. I haven't played in 10 years now since I played the banjo. And that means here at the house, too, at any time. I just haven't played at all. And... I just can't. I can't play anymore. I can tell my fingers what to do, and I know what to tell them to do, but they won't do it. And with the stroke, it was like that. And if you you have to exercise vocal, too.
Mm-hmm.
You just stop singing, which I did. I haven't done anything. When I quit, I quit. And when we went over there that day, I realized really quick that I didn't have it anymore. I didn't have the timing, the phrasing, and the voice to do it anymore. And it concerned me. And when we recorded it, I didn't like the way it sounded. I personally didn't. And, oh, they said, oh, that's good. Well, I knew better, you know.
It was good.
As a professional singer, player, whatever you want to call it, as a professional, you get so deep into that, you know when you're doing it and when you're doing it. You're the first one that knows when you're not on, up to the mark. And I knew it to begin with. I couldn't phrase with them. I didn't hear it right. And when I got done, they all, oh, that's fine, that's good. Well, I knew it wasn't, though. That's the whole point. And when the record came out, it sounded good. And I still think, although they denied, all of them denied, but I still think that that's one of the other ones that went back and redid that part.
No, I promise you it wasn't.
It's like the Beatles.
it was the you.
When they get done recording something, when they'd all take Ringo out to lunch, and then Paul would put the drums back on it the way he wanted it.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
No, I promise you it was you.
Well.
He ain't buying it, Larry. Just give up.
Yeah.
I wouldn't believe that. No, I don't think it's me. And most recently, Rob McCurry is doing a banjo album, and he said, I'd like to have you on this. And I said, Rob, I can't play a lick, man. I can't do anything. And he said, we're going to do the song. We could. And I said, I'll tell you what I can do. With a thumb pick, I could do four notes on the intro. Da-da-da-da, I can do that. He said, come on, do it. And so I went and did it. And I told, Ronnie told Larry about it. And Larry said, well, will you come to one note on my
Yeah.
I'm getting hot on this one note stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to have you play six notes on my next record.
you'll have to get something easy.
Wonder what that cost me per note, Steve.
Yeah, well, you're talking to the man right now. Believe me.
Do I need to talk to Sonny's lawyer about this?
Maybe.
I don't have a lawyer anymore.
Oh, you don't? Okay.
I don't need one.
He doesn't. I was going to say, yeah, you're jumping the gun there, Larry. He doesn't need one.
No, I don't need a lawyer anymore. I'm out of it completely and forgotten, and I'm glad of it. You know, I had a good time and had a good career, and it lasted good, and we did a lot of good things, and I've done everything I wanted to do, and so when I quit, I quit. I was just done with it completely.
Well, you're certainly not forgotten.
Well,
you know that. People ask me about you all the time.
I think I am mostly, but I want to be. I'm not a hanger on, and don't want to be, never have been, and I don't want to be. So.
Well, I admire you for doing what you've done and quitting like you've quit. I admire that. That's awful strong of you to do that.
Well, it just seems like to me, I don't want to, like Lester Flatt, poor Lester was sick and would still go to the Opry. And one night, he just collapsed out there and they had to leave him off. And I would guarantee you, out of the 4,000 people that were sitting out there in the audience, I'll bet you that 2,500 to 3,500 of them thought that he was drunk.
Mm-hmm.
I bet. I was down there the night at Phil Monroe. He was, 80 years old, and they got his medicine wrong some way, and he just froze backstage. He was just standing there looking straight ahead, staring, and he wouldn't say anything. He wouldn't move, wouldn't do anything. And I've seen that. And Grandpa Jones couldn't hear and sang. Everybody laughed and made fun of him, but he couldn't hear at the end. And I just didn't want that. I didn't want to do that. And so when I had the shoulder surgery,
And I sang with them at the Alfie for about a year after that, and then that's it. I just totally dropped it and quit, and I didn't want to go back and don't want to go back. I wouldn't do that again for nothing, although I don't regret what I did, but I wouldn't do it again. Hmm. So, it gives you a clue, Larry, what to do.
What's that?
That'll give you a clue of what to do when the time comes, and you'll know it, too.
Oh, I know. When the time comes, I'll be thinking of you a lot. I'm sure I will.
Yeah. You'll be respected for walking away from it when you could.
Yeah.
You know, I've made two appearances at the Opera House for IBMA, presenting awards, and they introduced me. I got standing ovations both times.
Yeah. And I thought... If that happened at Figma with Kenny Ingram's induction.
It sure did. And I thought to myself, where were you all when I needed?
I knew that was coming. I was waiting for that.
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, I think that's the second time I actually said that.
Yeah, you said it at Figma. Where were y'all when I needed you?
But anyway.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Well, Larry, I didn't let you talk too much.
No, I have nothing to say. We covered it all pretty good before you came on the line.
We talked for a half hour before we patched you in. Can talk. Yeah, so we're good. We're good.
For those interested out there, Larry's one of my favorite people. I've got, and I don't say this for any other reason other than just the fact I don't have many people that I really call good friends. And Larry's one of them.
Thank you, man. Yeah. I feel the same way about you. Thank you, buddy.
Larry's one of my favorite people and has been for a long time.
Well, you know how I feel about you, and it's not only about the music and being heroes, but it's just you personally and what you've done for me, and I feel the same way. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Buy him lunch next week now, Steve.
You know what? I can't tell you, Larry, how many times he said, next time I'm buying.
Yeah.
Who said that?
some guy in a van the first time.
An old
green van. Then it was a pickup truck. The last guy told me that drove a Prius.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I went from 12 miles a gallon to 54.
Yeah.
It's no way to meet them, boys.
You know, that's why we like to have people come eat lunch with us because they buy.
Yeah, well,
Ronnie Reno is the best for that. He finds them people that will buy.
Yeah, he does. He does good at that.
Well, we're about time. Sonny, we don't have the NCAA to watch right now because we don't have a team playing in there.
We don't have a team, period.
Well, that's true. See, you just can't leave them hanging, Larry, because they get whacked out of the park. I don't care what you say. It's just you can't. You got to finish the thought.
I didn't want to bring that up today.
They're saying though, and this is, I guess, accepted as a fact, just about all over everywhere, that the class that he's got coming in, combined with what he's got now. Would be the best recruited class in the history of college basketball.
Yeah.
Everybody's signing with UK right now. I saw that the other day.
Well, they raised their prices.
Isn't that something?
I think it's a 6'10 or 6'11 guy that they're saying if he comes, that will be absolutely the best recruiting class of ever. Right. Ever.
Yeah, we have that to look forward to. Larry, thanks so much, man, for being. We're going to do this again, aren't we? Can I count on you to come back in sometime?
I'm here anytime you want me to be. It was a pleasure, Steve. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you, Sonny. Thanks so much for hanging out there until we could dial you in. I had to push some magic buttons to find you down there, but I thought we'd have some fun with you and Larry for a while.
Oh yeah, I enjoy it. Great deal. Take care of yourself and talk to you later, Lawrence.
All right,
Sonny. Lawrence. You too, buddy. Thank you, Steve.
See you guys. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, boy, I don't know what to say. Sonny Osborne, Lawrence, as Sonny calls Larry Stevenson, Lawrence Stevenson. This has been Steve Martin's Unreal Bluegrass on Worldwide Bluegrass. I hope you've enjoyed it.